I'm going to begin this talk with a history lesson, so please listen carefully. I shall say this only once. In 1908, 6 years before the beginning of World War I, the Austria-Hungary Empire, in orange, took control of Bosnia and Herzegovina, which angered many people in neighboring Serbia. In 1914, Archduke Franz Ferdinand and his wife Sophie, who were heirs to the Austrian-Hungarian throne, the Habsburg dynasty, were assassinated as they inspected their troops in Bosnia by a Serbian man. The Austrian-Hungarian Empire then threatened Serbia with reprisals and sought Germany, their ally, for such actions. However, Serbia looked to Russia for support, and Russia began to mobilize their troops along the German, Austrian-Hungarian border. Germany felt in danger and declared war on Russia and France, who were allies with Russia, and invaded Belgium to gain access to northern France. Once Belgium had been invaded by Germany, Britain declared war on Germany. Beginning of World War I. I will test you on that after the service. But up until now, life in the village of Hartest, Suffolk, which is between Bury St Edmunds and Sudbury, had gone on quite normal. In the late 1880s, 1890s, Charles and Annie Saw had lived in Mill Cottage. Charles was a miller and had some standing in the village. They had had 6 boys and 2 girls. But in 1907, disaster had struck the family when Charles had been struck by lightning in a mill and killed, leaving Annie a widow. By 1914, most of her children were now young adults. We don't know how Annie first learned that Britain had declared war on Germany, or whether she realized how much it would affect her. But what we do know is that in the next 2 years, her 6 sons had all left home and become part of either the Suffolk, Norfolk, or Essex regiments. Their contribution to the war effort was immense. In fact, it was so immense, this sacrifice was recognized by the king himself. A letter came to Annie. "Madam, I am commanded by the king to convey to you an expression of his majesty's appreciation of the patriotic spirit which has prompted your 6 sons to give their services at the present time to the army. The king was much gratified to hear of the manner in which they have so readily responded to the call of their sovereign and their country, and I am to express to you and to them his majesty's congratulations on having contributed in so full a measure to the great cause for which all the people of the British Empire are so bravely fighting. I have the honour to be, madam, your obedient servant. So how do you think it felt for Annie, a widow, for all of her 6 sons to go to war? How do you think she felt? Miraculously, 5 of her 6 sons returned from the war, even though some fought in the Somme. The exception, though, was Ezekiel Saw, a drummer in the 2nd Norfolk Regiment. He was posted to Mesopotamia, which is modern-day Iraq. Here, the British were fighting with Indian regiments against the Turks, who had sided with the Germans against the Russians, and they were fighting to protect the Royal Navy's principal source of fuel oil. In 1916, Ezekiel's regiment was captured and marched to a Turkish concentration camp in Iraq. He died of dysentery. Nobody knows where his body went. But today, his name is on the Basna War Memorial for the dead. I wonder how Annie Saw reacted when she knew that her son Ezekiel was dead. The respected war historian A.J.P. Taylor, writing in 1963, commented that the war in Iraq in 1915-16 was a meaningless and disastrous campaign. Not that history ever repeats itself, of course. Indeed, his book, The First World War, An Illustrated History, says that for 4 years, while statesmen and generals blundered, the massed armies of Europe writhed in a festival of mud and blood. The war on the Western Front officially ended 100 years ago today, and it is generally agreed that there were no real winners. It was just that Germany was the biggest loser. 16 to 18 million people died worldwide. A further 37 million people were casualties. So, was the sacrifice made by the sons of Charles and Annie Saw worth it? Was Ezekiel Saw's death in vain? And when today we say, "And we will remember them," what do we actually mean? For some of us, firstly, we remember the individuals that we knew, who were part of our families, who died in warfare, fighting in World War I, World War II, and conflict since. We say, "We will remember them." We remember their individual sacrifice. Secondly, we remember the nameless soldiers who fought for our country, defending it against what might have been. We might have been invaded. In the Second World War, we might have been ruled by the Third Reich. We will remember them, their collective sacrifice, which was for our gain. But when we say we will remember them, we also need to remember humanity. That war is inhumane. That humanity can rise to the heights of selfless sacrifice for others, or sink to the depths of depravity through selfish vile and murderous acts. This humanity is our humanity. We are all part of this humanity, however good, however evil. We remember how human we actually are. Yuval Noah Harari has written a bestseller. It's called Sapiens, A Brief History of Humankind. As a Jewish atheist with Buddhist sympathies, it makes for an interesting read for a Christian. His final assessment of humanity as he looks into the future is this: we are more powerful than ever before, but we have little idea what to do with that power. Worse still, humans seem to be more irresponsible than ever. Self-made gods with only laws of physics to keep us company, we are accountable to no one. Is there anything more dangerous than dissatisfied and irresponsible gods who don't know what they want? So perhaps it's fortunate that we should also remember on a day like this Jesus' sacrifice for humanity. Jesus, in the passage that we have looked at, celebrates the feast of the Jewish Passover. And as we read this, we soon realize that something is going on. Jesus has a plan. Something is in Jesus' mind. In reply to the disciples' question, where are we going to celebrate this Passover? Jesus has it all worked out. As you enter the city, a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him to the house that he enters and say to the owner of the house, "The teacher asks, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?" Jesus here is stage managing something. It is very deliberate and very intentional. Something profound is about to happen. You see, the Passover was the time when the Israelites remembered. It was their time of remembrance. They remembered their liberation from Egypt by God through Moses. And now Jesus does something deliberate on their remembrance day. So what does he say and what does he do? He took bread, gave thanks and broke it and gave it to them, saying, "This is my body given for you. Do this in remembrance of me." Jesus is saying, from now on, every time you simply take bread, drink wine together, you are to remember me and what I'm about to do. For now I am about to liberate you from something even greater than Egypt and even greater than the Romans. I'm going to liberate you from sinful humanity, even death itself. This is my body given for you. Jesus' body was given in sacrifice. He gave us something through his death. What? What did he give us through his death? Well, just as the lives of soldiers were given so that we might have freedom from tyrannical regimes, so Jesus' life was given so that we might have freedom from the cancer which has infected humanity, which is called sin. Jesus didn't save his followers from the Romans. He saved them and us from the dark aspect of humanity that is within. Every Roman, every German, every British, the greed, the hate, the pride, and everything else that is the cause, ultimately, of war. So here is the point. When we realize that we need saving from ourselves because we are all human, we will realize that we actually can't save ourselves. Only Jesus can do that. "Do this in remembrance of me," he said, "because we forget his sacrifice at our peril." It is his sacrifice that saves us from ourselves. So Jesus has rescued us from the dominion of darkness, which has sadly overtaken the human race, the human being, the human species. His sacrifice has saved us from this darkness within and without. Jesus is our liberator. So this morning, we pause to remember the sacrifice of millions of men and women who sacrificed their lives for their country. But it is also good to pause and to remember that Jesus sacrificed his life for humanity, for me and for you, because I need and you need to be saved from yourself. And it's only Jesus that can do that.